Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. And we're having our Blog Talk problems still. We thought that they were through after this hack, and I was wrong. Okay.
Day will take the night away. Happy belting, everyone. Gather round and bring a drum. Celebrate the summer sun. And we'll dance the night away. Happy first of May to you. Wear your belt and bring your flute. May you be blessed in all you do. And we'll dance the night away.
Celebrating tonight. Others are going to wait for this weekend to dance the fire. So, hey, I'm with you all in spirit. Quinn, are you with us? Okay, I think Quinn must be having a cigarette. We do not have Blaine in, and we're having trouble with Omo's recording. I'm telling you, this is going to be interesting tonight. This is a romantic song that Drazy wrote and sang.
body hurting, but the message was received. Seems like we found a way out of this maze. Feels like we lost all those days. Better instead we should look straight ahead.
That was Drazy Hoops, Sound of One Heart Breaking. And I thought, because we're going to have poetry later tonight, some very romantic, and I thought that song was very apropos. Now we have Raymond Blaine on Palestine.
Hello, everybody. Wonderful day today. Yes. I'm going to read some stories about what's been going on in the last week over in the West Bank and partially in Gaza. It's basically different violations that these Israeli settlers continue to get away with, and we need to bring attention to the world that these things are going on so this can stop, because this isn't going well. This was in the West Bank. This was recorded yesterday by MON News agencies. So as settlers started over 50 fires across the West Bank on Tuesday, following the fatal stabbing of a settler in Nablus, official news agency WAFA reported. If anybody doesn't know, there was an altercation, I believe, at a bus stop or something between an Israeli settler and a Palestinian man, and the Palestinian ended up killing the settler and then being shot and injured himself. And he's in the hospital now, and nobody can visit him, no lawyers or anything. So not real sure what his condition is, or even, you know, what started it. But anyway, the picture I saw of the guy that he killed was definitely an ultra-Orthodox Jew and settler and that kind of thing. So probably one of the more violent people in the West Bank.
Right, one of their squatters. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the way it goes. But anyway, so a report by the civil defense said firefighters had to deal with 57 fires caused by settlers. Hundreds of olive and almond trees were damaged, and large areas of cultivated crops were destroyed. And then settlers attacked Palestinians and their property in Nablus and the Tokum areas on Tuesday. And then settlers attacked a mosque and burned tires at the junction in Nablus. They also heard stones at Palestinian cars, including two buses holding schoolgirls, injuring over 20 people. And these were little kids, and they attacked these buses with stones and rocks. And, of course, nothing ever happened, and nobody got any trouble for it.
Right.
And then four Palestinians were injured and taken to the hospital in Nablus for treatment following clashes in a village called Urif, where settlers had damaged a mosque. Yeah, they're just going crazy over there. As it says, Israeli forces rarely prosecute settlers for violence against Palestinians and their property, which is routine in the occupied West Bank. I just want to say to everybody that if this was the other way around, if Palestinians were torching Israeli settlements, this would be world news. Unfortunately, this is not world news, except when you get it from me, Raymond Blaine, on Palestine.
Well, okay. If we were the ones, I mean, if one of them had killed one of our people, which they do all the time, and we were starting all these, like you said, I mean, it would be a major deal.
Yeah, it would be all over the news, and it would be how horrible the Palestinians are, and it's, oh, another Arab uprising, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, anyway, so people, come on now, let's pay attention, everybody, and, you know, let's just call it what it is. You know, this is horrible. Okay, so this is the weekly report on Israeli human rights violations in the occupied territories, and this is compiled by the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. So it looks like Palestinian civilians were wounded during an Israeli incursion, and a child was wounded near the annexation wall in the West Bank. In addition, six protesters and an elderly woman were wounded during peaceful protests against an annexation wall settlement activities in imprisonment of Palestinians. Okay, so Israeli attacks in the West Bank. During the past week, Israeli forces conducted at least 98 military incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank. During these incursions, Israeli forces abducted at least 52 Palestinians, including six children and a number of political leaders and members of the Hamas movement. During the reporting period, Israeli forces wounded eight Palestinian civilians, including four children and a 70-year-old elderly woman in the West Bank, three of whom, including the elderly woman, were wounded during peaceful protests in Selwad village, and I believe that's northeast of Ramallah. And they were protesting against the confiscation of their lands for the interests of settlement activities. Yeah. Moreover, three children were wounded, one of whom was abducted during a protest organized by dozens of children at the southern entrance of the Al-Jazoon refugee camp, north of Ramallah, to support the Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. A Palestinian civilian was wounded when the Israeli forces moved into the above-mentioned refugee camp and opened fire at a group of boys and young men. Further, a child was wounded near the annexation wall in Jabaloon village near Jenin. In the West Bank, during incursions conducted by the Israeli forces, a Palestinian from Al-Jazoon refugee camp north of Ramallah was wounded. On April 24, 2014, a Palestinian child was wounded when Israeli forces patrolled at the annexation wall in Jabaloon village, northeast of Jenin, opening fire on two children under the pretext that they attempted to cross a security fence. As a result, one of them was wounded, while the other was abducted. Israeli forces established dozens of checkpoints in the West Bank. Seven Palestinian civilians, including four children, were abducted at these checkpoints. Israeli forces have continued activity to create Jewish majority in eastern Jerusalem. Seven residential apartments and two commercial stores were demolished. On Thursday, April 18, 2013, Israeli forces raided Al-Kahard village in the south of Bethlehem, bulldozed two agriculture sheds under the pretext not obtaining a permit and building near the settlements. The destroyed sheds are located near Daniel and Eliezer settlement in the south of the village and were established over 60 years ago and were used for storage rooms for agricultural equipment. On Saturday the 20th, Israeli forces accompanied by vehicles of Israeli civil administration raided the Atus area west of Bia'ula village in the west of Hebron. An officer of the civil administration placed seven evacuation notices on a number of the lands that are adjacent to the wall. That included the confiscations of approximately 600 dunams of agricultural and grazing lands. They're continuing to take this property. Nobody's doing anything about it.
Under false pretenses. I mean, they say the Palestinians don't have building permits, yada, yada. But if you try to get one, what is it, 94, 96% of Palestinians are refused building permits if they try to do it.
You might as well just make it 100%.
Yeah.
So anyway, so then on Monday the 22nd, the Israeli forces accompanied by military vehicles and a bulldozer uprooted 150 olive trees. In the 150 olive trees, you're just uprooting them. I don't understand. In the Al-Marhan area in the east of Bia'jun village in east of Nablus. These trees are between aged 1 and 1.5 years. This is the fifth time the Israeli forces have uprooted trees from the same plot of land within the past year under the pretext that it's a closed area for military reasons.
Oh.
On Tuesday, it just makes no sense. On Tuesday, the 23rd of April, Israeli forces bulldozed 11 tents to use as residence and cattle barns in Al-Malay Valley area and the neighboring Yarza village in the northern valleys in the northeast of Tubas. As a result, 30 civilians became homeless, including 20 children. Also on Tuesday, Israeli forces uprooted 650 olive trees, aged between 1 and 4 years, in Omir area southeast of Yatta in the south of Hebron. They also bulldozed a tent. On the same day, Israeli forces destroyed a greenhouse of 420 square meters and 5 meters in height that was used to store harvest crops for exportation, located in Al-Shabasi area in the Badala village, east of the bypass road number 90, east of Tubas. Its destroyed contents were a large supply of cartons, 4 surveillance cameras, a computer, and a digital scale. All that seems really has something to do with security, right? Is that it?
Yeah.
On Wednesday, the 24th, this continues. Israeli forces bulldozed an under-construction house, 2 agricultural rooms, and an 80-meter-high wall of reinforced concrete in the Kalat al-Balas area, south-east of Al-Arub refugee camp in the north of Hebron. On Wednesday, Israeli forces bulldozed the western area of Efana village in the west of Hebron and detained a number of construction workers while working on a water well of 200 cubic meters and banned them from continuing their work under the pretext that this site has been given notice to halt construction work, claiming that this area falls under Israeli security jurisdictions, according to the Oslo Accords. They only use the Oslo Accords when it fits their narrative.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't fit their narrative, they don't do anything. But if it fits their narrative, then they pull out this stuff. On Wednesday, Israeli forces placed a notice with orders to halt construction on a site designed to build for building a medical clinic in the center of the village. They also photographed the site. They won't even let them build medical clinics. On Wednesday, the 24th of April, Israeli forces bulldozed 7 residential apartments and 2 shops in the El Tur village in the occupied East Jerusalem. According to data acquired by PCHR at approximately 8 a.m., Israeli forces, accompanied by 2 bulldozers and officers of the Israeli municipality in Jerusalem, raided the Al-Hadoub neighborhood in Al-Tur village in the occupied East Jerusalem. The bulldozers destroyed 3 apartments, 2 shops. The destroyed property belonged to Kayed Mohammed Abdul Jarrat and were destroyed under the pretext of not obtaining a construction permit. In his statement, Jarrat said that his family occupies a house adjacent to the bulldozed apartment since 1997. He added that this is the 3rd time that Israeli forces destroyed some of his property under the pretext of not obtaining a construction permit, knowing that the family has been trying to attain one for many years, but have been unsuccessful. Moreover, Jarrat said that the bulldozers made 40 members of his family homeless. 6 of them are disabled, and 3 are blind.
Oh, wow.
Great.
I was saying that but about the trees, you know, they sure know how to celebrate Earth Day and Arbor Day, don't they? I mean, instead of, you know, honoring nature and being glad that for the trees and the oxygen and the fruit from them. Oh, no, that's not good enough. They just have to destroy them.
Well, what they're doing, what they do is they dig them up and then they transfer them to the settlements.
Well, sure.
They either burn them or they steal them. That's what the 2
right.
things they do.
Now, if they burn them, that's different. But no, if they just upend them and take them, sure. Well, hey, squatters are thieves to begin with, so they'll take anything.
Oh, if it's not nailed down, they're going to steal it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, geez. So in relative context, Israeli forces railed Al Jadid Street in the Al Tur village to bulldoze an under-construction housing building under the pretext of not obtaining a permit. This is another one where they were bulldozed because of the permit. So the Israeli forces cordoned this building at early morning hours, but were unable to carry out the bulldozing because the street leading to it was too narrow for the bulldozers to pass through. Therefore, Israeli forces bulldozed a number of shops and residential apartments that belonged to him in another part of the village, returned later on, and bulldozed the building. So they bulldozed the area to get the bulldozer in, and then they bulldozed his building. And they bulldozed all
right.
his property.
Right.
And the one shops weren't even near where they were bulldozing his house. They just did that out of spite, I believe.
Yeah,
they were
pissed
they couldn't get in there.
Yeah. Yes, Caterpillar at work.
He added that the buildings is of 2 stories, each of 270 square meters, and has 4 apartments. Started building with a partner 6 months ago, but was surprised to see the demolition notice at the time. He also pointed out that he had tried to obtain a permit to continue with the construction, but was unsuccessful. That's just the West Bank. This is in 1 week, guys. 1 week. Okay? And I'm not done. All right? So we got Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli forces conducted two limited incursions into the Gaza Strip. Both incursions were conducted in the east of Beit Hanun, north of the Gaza Strip, on the 22nd and 24th of April 2013. They leveled lands. However, thank God, no casualties were reported. During the reporting period, Israeli forces stationed along the border fence southeast of Deir Belah in the center of the Gaza Strip abducted two children who attempted to cross the border into Israel. And that was the same story where they wounded the one kid and then they abducted the other one. So they may have abducted both of them. Israel has continued to oppose a total closure and has isolated the Gaza Strip from the outside world. Okay, so Israeli settlement activities. All illegal under international law. I'm not making this stuff up. Israeli forces have continued to support settlement activities in the West Bank, and Israeli settlers have continued to attack Palestinian civilians and property. On Saturday, 20th of April, 2013, a group of settlers from Beit Ian settlement established on Palestinian civilian lands in the West Bank of Beit Umar village in the north of Hebron attacked Palestinian farmers while working in their lands in Abu Rish Valley area, adjacent to the aforementioned settlement. It should be noted that this attack is the third attack of this kind against farmers in Abdul Rish Valley within the last 3 months, or no, within the last month of April, as settlers have broken and uprooted a number of olive and almond trees belonging to the Salabi family. On Tuesday, 23rd, April 2013, a group of settlers from Ofra settlement, established on the lands of Silwat and Ayan Robat villages in the north east of Ramallah, raided Deir Jarar village, located approximately 2 kilometers to the northeast of the aforementioned settlement. The settlers then set fire to 10 Palestinian civilian vehicles in the village. Why? In the testimony, it said about 2 in the morning on April 23rd, my family and I were asleep at home located in the western area of the village. All of a sudden, we heard an explosion. Looked out the window, which overlooks the front lawn of the house, and I was shocked to see that my daughter's car, 2012 Golf, was on fire, and my son's 1995 Black Mazda was on fire. Immediately, my son was on, my wife and I put out the fires in the two cars, but the back of the cars were totally burnt. Some of the neighbors came over and told us that the settlers had burnt 8 other vehicles in the village, and I learned later that after Israeli forces and police arrived in the area, that one of the neighbors saw someone carrying a backpack and running towards Ofra settlement after setting the cars on fire. I also learned that the surveillance cameras fixed on Al-Awali stores located by the entrance to the village had caught the same person on tape when he entered the village. I was told that the Israeli police confiscated the tape. Also on Wednesday, a group of settlers under the protection of Israeli forces and military vehicles raided Yusuf's grave area in the east of Nablus. The settlers stayed for a while, performed some Talmudic rituals, and withdrew later. No incidents were reported. Israeli attacks on nonviolent demonstrations. Palestinian civilians organized many peaceful protests in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners detained in Israeli jails, especially on those on hunger strike. Israeli forces used excessive force against the protesters. As a result, 3 children were wounded at the southern entrance of Al-Jazoon refugee camp north of Ramallah. On 19th of April 2013, the Israeli forces abducted one of the wounded children after offering him the first aid he needed. So they offered him first aid, and then when he came over to him,
and then they steal him.
And then who knows what's happening to him now? He's injured. He's sick. Who knows what's wrong with him?
And he can't be with his parents. His parents can't help him.
Now he's in a dungeon.
Yeah.
Great. Oh,
but you know, before you go, I want you to we've talked about this man before. This young man who's from Palestine, who is a special friend of yours. He has a family, and you've got great news about this weekend.
Yeah, Hakeem Bashir, he is graduating with a master's degree from the Washington State University. That's a major university here in Washington. So big ups for Hakeem, and he did wonderfully. He got number one, GPA 2 semesters ago, and he managed to get his master's degree during a time when it was very difficult for him. Because his dad was receiving cancer treatment the whole time he's been going to school. So yeah. Yeah. he's stayed focused, and I don't know how, and I'm so, so proud of him. So proud of him.
You had a lot to do with that. I mean, you had a lot to do with getting the help for his father and everything. And, I mean, getting him
here. Like I said, I was just helping. I was with a big group of people. It was a lot of people. I just happened to be part of it. So
yeah.
I try not to take any credit, but I sure enjoy seeing the results of all the hard work that everybody's doing. So
I think that's just marvelous. But thank you, Blaine. I mean, I wanted to end on a good note because there's so
wonderful.
There's so much to press.
Okay, and then next week I'll be talking. I'll be reading some more stuff from Hossam, and I believe she's trying to come to Washington D.C. for a leadership conference.
Oh.
And so starting next week, I'm going to start raising money to try to get her over here. That's a big deal. Most women don't get a chance. Yeah.
So
leadership conference that brings Israelis and Palestinians together to discuss issues on the ground, and they're mostly young people, so it should be really good.
Oh, that will be. Oh, that's wonderful.
Wonderful. All right. Well, everybody have a nice week. I'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks, and long live Palestine.
Long live, yes. Thank you, Blaine.
Okay. Thank you, Ruth. Bye now.
Wow. Okay, it's always good to have a little bit of the good stuff to finish up with. So we have two of our poets here. We have Quinn Overman and Derek Ubante Dunham. I think I've just mispronounced the name you've taken. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Hello, Roseanne.
Hey. All right. Now, we know that Susan Marie will be late. She is doing a poetry reading at a club in Buffalo tonight, but she'll be here. And we're not quite sure if Rick Wilson's going to make it in or not. So, anyway, we're just going to start out. And I think both of you had told me that you didn't have formal training in writing. Am I right?
That's certainly right by me.
Okay, Derek.
I had some creative writing courses in college and excelled in English in high school, but no, I've winged it.
Yeah. Well, now I'm getting a little feedback and I can't do anything, so there's something there. Make sure nothing's on. Okay. I think that might be better. And I should say that Quinn can be found at www.writerscafe.org. And Derek is at www.truthfever.com.
But my nom de plume at Writer's Cafe, excuse me, is Quinn Finn.
Quinn Finn.
Quinn Finn, one word.
So there you have it. Yeah, if you look up Quinn, it's not going to happen. And that's two N's?
Quinfinn.
Yes. Right. So what, I want to talk about muses and things like that. Your inspiration. What is a muse? Or do either of you claim to have a muse that, you know, keeps after you in your writing?
A muse can be anything from an idea to a lover. It can be a dog. Something that gives you pleasure and makes you think about things you wouldn't normally think about in life. Whatever makes you spark that creative desire and makes you want to write down your feelings, that's your muse. In my case, many times it's been a person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's your inspiration then.
Exactly. The muse is the inspirational spark that drives you.
Well, Derek, what would you say? What's the driving force behind your writing?
I'd say mostly trying to get issues I care about out there, get people thinking and talking about them.
Oh, okay. I do know that because we've had you before. You lost a lot of your writings a couple of years ago in a fire. And now you are building up another, I want to say batch, but more writing. So how is that going?
It seems to be going fairly well. I was attending a creative writing class every single week on Wednesday morning. And I actually did not go this week. I'm really kind of bummed myself. I slept right through it. But I've been trying to force myself to do that because I've been battling depression too, so it's hard for me to get myself writing a lot of the time.
Okay. But it's a case of, like, once you get started, you just keep going. But it's the initial startup that is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quinn, now you said you in high school you were writing. What were you writing poetry?
What was I writing about in high school?
Yeah. Were you doing poetry? You were in a creative writing class.
Yes. As early as, 70. Mm-hmm. And the Vietnam War was going on, and a lot of my writing was about how I felt about the Vietnam War and the hippie culture and social awareness and ecology and all the things that hippies really cared about, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So social concerns and things. I know you're known now as a romantic poet. When did you start shifting that way?
Life teaches you many things. and a young man, well, in my case, I fell in love easily, quickly, and many times. And it's emotion is a beautiful thing. I'm very fond of saying, when I have people ask me on my writing site, you know, where do you get your ideas? Well, you know, romance and sadness and losing love is great fodder for poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredible fodder for poetry. And the more hurt you have been, the sweeter it is when you write it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Derek, are you writing any romantic things?
I have not in a long time.
Uh-huh.
That was it's kind of funny because hearing him talk about the shift he's made from, I don't know, social justice poems to the romantic side, I think I kind of went the other direction.
Ah, okay. You were doing that young teenage boy love stuff, and then you looked around at the world and said, oh, my God.
Well, I grew down.
What'd you say?
I didn't grow up. I grew down.
Quinn regressed. He likes love. Nothing wrong with love.
You know, I had enough war when I was a teenager. I wanted love.
Nothing wrong with love. So, okay, you started as a teen. Well, then you both really started as teens writing.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you believe that, and Quinn just touched on that, do you really believe that a person who hasn't experienced something can't do it justice? Because I've always heard, write what you know.
I don't necessarily agree with that. It depends on, I don't know, if you're trying to write about something you don't know anything about, certainly. But a lot of the stuff I've written about is, you know, I've written a couple poems about war. I've never set foot on, you know, foreign soil as a soldier, but having done a lot of research and talked to people who have been there, I feel like I can write about that, you know, with some attachment to it beyond just words.
That's what I would think, that when, depending on the topic, but some things you can only imagine what it would be like, but you can turn out something very powerful.
This is a very different world from what I grew up in, and the creative mind thrives on what it gleans from information.
Mm-hmm.
And because we are in the age of information, and you can find so many things at a touch.
Yeah.
Then if you see it and you study it, then you can make it convincing. If you have a good enough imagination, you have a creative process that works, and others can feel what you're saying and how you're saying it, then you can convince somebody that you fought in a war you never went to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that as long as you aren't just necessarily coming out and saying that you did that type of thing.
No,
because, well, it's your imagination. I mean, you're putting yourself in that position. What if? And
exactly. As long as you make it known that, hey, this is a fantasy. I don't do this thing.
Yeah.
Then you're being realistic, and people can accept that. Yeah. But the thing is, there are those posers out there who, you know.
Right, and that's not just poets, but other people. I mean, whether it's journalists or what.
Oh gosh, in all walks of life.
Yeah. I mean, it's just we know there's. I wanted to ask you a little while later about some more like the legality thing, but this led me into Derek. Why don't you read one of yours? You have a very powerful one that talks about a position that you haven't been in. You showed it to me right before the show. Read that.
Sure. Wrongly accused. Can you imagine sitting in a cell facing life or death? The cold steel of judgment cast by 12 of your peers. Everybody is innocent in prison, especially those who actually are. To emerge vindicated, for the truth to be told, for those whose freedom was wrongly cut short, because a scared eyewitness who truly believed with every inch of his soul that number four was the masked man who rattled his cage of security. For a man to emerge and feel air in his face, sun on his skin, is powerful. But to do so without contempt, with warmth in his heart, with compassion for his captors, is a kind of peace I hope all of us will one day know.
That hit a lot of chords for me because I'm very upset with so many people being in prison that shouldn't be, kind of thing, and so many innocent people.
Well, Derek, you may color me truly impressed.
Isn't that powerful?
That is a wonderful, wonderful prose. Yes. Wonderful.
So but
it speaks so much truth in volumes of it. Yes.
Yeah, in just a few words. So I wanted to ask, have you run into the plagiarism of your work, Quinn?
I've not seen direct plagiarism. I've had younger people steal, I don't know, a title from my poetry and make it their avatar, you know, silly things like that. But I'm not upset by that. You know, if they're not really directly stealing from me. I put it out there. It wasn't part of the content of my work. But no, I've never seen that. But I have seen it on the site I'm on. We've called out a few people.
Okay.
And we're pretty vigilant.
That's good because I've noticed, in on like one of the groups I'm on, that they're just, it's a pagan group and they're against plagiarism, and most of the people are writers, and man, in that world there's a lot of stealing going on.
Well, a poet thinks of his rights as his babies.
Yeah, well, I think that anyone who spends the time, and you know, a wordsmith, this is mine. And I have noticed that while we're pretty good, I mean, well, at least in school we learn about copyrights and not to plagiarize and things, but a lot of countries, that's not very important to them.
Well, you know, the greatest travesty of poetry is that 9 out of 10 writers have to die before they become popular. So, there are some. Sylvia Plath, Emily Dickinson, Rod McEwen, Dylan Thomas, to name a few of my favorite greats. Edgar Allan Poe, of course, died before he became famous. But poetry is, well, it's all art. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I compare a person's writing to painting when I'm reviewing them. And it is very much like painting. If a person knows how to arrange words and make you think of a landscape or a portrait or a beautiful situation, that's a painting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, that's why we have a lot of crossover with And I believe in my heart that everybody is creative, but not everybody is out there doing it. But we have a lot of musicians and writers that cross over, that type of thing. Sarit, who's on here fortnightly, also like Blaine, she's a musician and a fantastic painter. And, I mean, it just seems to work that way. But now I found with, like I was talking about the other countries kind of thing, somebody, a few months ago, posted this poem that supposedly he wrote, right? Well, of all the poems, it was Frost, The Road Less Taken.
One of my favorites.
I love that. But, you know, and so I went on. I said, well, are you going to give the poet credit for this? And he said, oh, well, that doesn't matter. It, you know, I...
Only the poet laureate of Virginia at one time. Yes. Yeah, I mean, come on, please.
And I said, well, you're a thief. And he... but, so that... And, I mean, I shouldn't pick on him because he was from another country, and I know sometimes that they have different ideas, but I think there's a lot of this going on. So once you put it out there, you really, even though that's your child, like you said, you really... It's almost impossible to get...
Well, no, you can't keep it from happening, but every mother knows her child.
Right, right. And your friends know, too, because,
yes.
You know, depending on where this thing is posted, people are going to tell you, well, yeah, you know, there was a chapter, I'm talking about the writers in prose now, you know, and this sounded an awful lot like you and I went over here, and, you know, this whole book this person is posting and selling online is yours.
Well, I have to confess, I was on my site the other day, and I saw a person from India who posted a poem, and they used a title that I had used for a story I wrote. I write some short stories as well. And it was so coincidental that I had to go there and say, as a review, all I said was, interesting title. And the person jumped off the site.
Oh, okay, so they knew.
Yeah, they knew.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Derek, have you ever seen some of your work elsewhere without you being credited?
That is not something I've run into.
No. Do you just sort of look at it as a gift then to the world?
I mean, I suppose, but at the same time, if somebody represented it as their own work, that would upset me.
That's because it's your baby, Derek.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's your child.
I would feel that way. I mean, if they're putting it out there and not claiming credit, and not giving me credit, but not claiming it credit either, then that's one thing. But if they claim the credit,
that's despicable. Yeah.
That's a whole other thing. But I've heard that it's just. Once in a while, if you can prove that you wrote it or something, you can get it taken off of, like, one site online or something, depending. But you never really can. You just can't. It's such a energy-consuming thing to chase these thieves down. That most people...
No, it's like when I was in junior high school, there were guys running around quoting Shakespeare to young girls to try and get in their pants and saying it was their own poetry.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's the same thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, it goes on.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah, high school and all kinds of things happen, and some people just don't stop. Now, Quinn, you said that you do write short stories. Derek, do you write anything else besides poetry?
No.
No, okay. You're not blogging anywhere or doing...
But I've not even started.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch all that.
I keep saying I'm gonna write a book one of these days, but I haven't started that. And then my wife just reminded me from the next room over, I have started a blog, but I'm only 2 entries in so far.
Right. So it's, yeah. Well, but that's it. And when you do the book, maybe it's just gonna be the poetry book then. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because you express a lot of different things. And I know that you have worked with the homeless quite a bit. And I wondered if they have been a major influence.
Spending time with people that have been homeless, and also myself being homeless, has definitely been a huge influence in my life, and some of that has come out in my writing.
Yeah. Good. Well, I know that Quinn has done some writing about nature, the natural world. Do you want to read us one of those for your first one, Quinn?
Sure. I got one here. It's a little bit existential, but anyway. Are you ready?
Yep.
This side titled, What Is and What Should Never Be. Perpetual pain, unending strife. What a sad enigma is this thing, life. Peel back the years of time's undressing, this wicked curse, our golden blessing. A work of art, a twisted joke. All slaves are we to life's hard yoke. Beast of burden, spirit in the skin, alive with divinity in eternal sin. Intelligent and yet Neanderthal, both beast and lover within us all. Unique is man's duality, his weakness, his supremacy. And yet the karmic wheel spins round, soon we'll be gone without a sound. And lost will be the scourge of man. Great spirit, Mother Earth, will return again.
Wow. Okay. That's strange. When did you write that? A long time ago?
2 days ago.
2 days ago. Okay. You know what? That's so funny. Today's Wednesday. Friday, I interviewed Guy McPherson, who's living off the grid, and we talked about that. And, you know, in a way, he thinks that we're so far gone that we've polluted and destroyed the earth so much that we are totally doomed, but then that the earth will replenish herself with, you know, more of the beasties and everything. And
well, I certainly hope so, because man's not deserving of this planet. I'm sorry. No, it's like George Carlin said, the earth is going to shake us off like a bad case of fleas.
Well, that may all be fine and dandy, although, you know, it's everybody doesn't deserve to be extinct because
we
are really working toward helping. And Guy is the first to say that, you know, just because it looks sort of bleak now, that doesn't mean people shouldn't give it all they've got and really fight for the planet. I mean, do everything that you can, because it will very likely make a difference. Derek, do you write about that type of thing? Or just about nature at all? Nature, the environment?
I have not written any since the fire about nature. I believe I have in the past, though.
Well, you've been writing more about the the war, the issues like that, while Quinn is writing more romantic things. I'd like to ask each of you, what kind of advice would you give someone who just says, wow, I love to read poetry and I'd like to try? What would you tell them to do? How should they start?
Derek, you shoot first and I'll follow.
I guess the best advice I have is try not to let what you think other people will think stop you from writing in the first place. I have a great fear of reading anything out loud, especially something that I created. And I'm trying to put myself out there anyway, and I've been getting a lot of really positive responses, which is encouraging, but it's still something I struggle with, and I'm trying to not let keep me from doing it.
Oh, okay, then you're saying to write, there again, write what you're interested in, and not be writing to a certain audience, writing something that you think they're going to like.
Yeah, that definitely too.
Yeah. What about you, Quinn?
I'm going to say the best advice I could give a person aspiring to write, if you find that something stimulates your thoughts and it gets really to the heart of you, it doesn't matter how it comes out in words at first. You write it down. If it's just fragments of a sentence, if it's just thoughts and ideas, put it on paper. Doesn't matter how it's arranged. When you get it all down and you get it all out of your system, go back and look at it. Arrange it. Sculpt it. make art out of it, create. That is the purest thought and the most wonderful writing in the world, in my opinion.
Oh, okay, you're saying don't edit while you're writing.
No, no, let your spirit fly. You know, let your pen do it. Let your heart take over. Take your mind on a vacation. I don't care what you're doing. You know, drinking a beer, smoking a joint, watching TV. Just write.
Yeah.
And then when you're done with that, go back when you've got time and you want to sit down and contemplate what you've written. You're going to find something precious in there. Trust me, it's going to happen.
Okay, both of those, really good. Write something that you care about, what Eric's saying, and don't worry about what people are saying or what you think they might want to see and or hear. And then, Quinn, you're saying just let it go, the stream of consciousness kind of thing.
Just let it flow. It's emote. Poetry is emotion. The best poetry I've ever read was pure emotion.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with using, people would say, big fancy words, but it's not necessary to get the idea across. Am I right?
Well, yeah. Too many people try to use $13 words for a $7 sentence. It doesn't work all the time.
I like that sentence. Yeah. Okay. Right, because then they start to take away from the actual feeling.
Well, I'm not trying to steal the show from Derek because he has a lot to say, but I can say this. If you're not saying what you feel, if you're pretending to feel something that just sounds good, it's not you, it's not real, it's not poetry. It's, you get me?
Right. Well. Then we're talking. It's more commercial. You're writing to an audience.
If you want to write a commercial for McDonald's, go for it. You know what?
Yeah.
I'd rather speak from my heart and speak about things that really feel.
Yeah.
Of course, McDonald's pays a crap load more than what I'm doing right now. But anyway.
That's the other thing I was going to ask. Have either of you made any bucks doing this?
I have not made a cent, but it's priceless.
Well, right. We know that money isn't the end-all and be-all. But, Derek, have you made any money?
I have not either.
Oh. Do either of you have aspirations of making money from your poetry writing?
I would like to be published one day. I don't care to be filthy rich. Make a few bob would be nice.
That's not why you do it. And so that's when you free yourself up. I mean, I guess there's a good money, not wealth, but a decent living to be made by like ghostwriting and things like that. But you know, there again, it's not yours.
Actually, in all honesty, Ruthann, my greatest hope is that if I write anything beautiful enough to leave a mark on the world, I'm a happy camper.
Okay, that's very nice. I like that. So you're really writing to express yourself, and you're both very happy when somebody else reads it and is touched.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Derek, do you want to read another one for us?
Sure. I come from a place where life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness were promised to all. As I grew, though, I learned very differently. Our government killed, the Liberty Bell itself has cracked each time it rang, and now it collects dust behind glass. The pursuit of happiness is a fight you fight from within, a matrix of laws and rules designed by just a few, applied broadly, and manipulated frequently, and at will. I am sick of the hypocrisy, I see. But even more than that, I'm sick of being told this is just the way it is and the way it will always be. What about the lives of those who were here before us, the scalps our ancestors were paid to collect? What about the liberty of shackled slaves chained to a boat, forced to row to a destination unknown? What about the happiness promised to folks like me who have come to realize their country was built on a lie?
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's true. I
Derek, can I ask you, are you an indigenous native?
I'm not, no.
Okay. Okay.
Quinn, you are part.
I got a tiny little bit of Seminole blood, but that's not enough to call myself Native, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, well, everything you just read, Derek, is so true. I don't even know what to say.
It was profound.
I find myself sympathizing with people who are Native quite a bit because it's really frustrating here. You know, all these white people who have only been in this country a few hundred years talking about all these quote-unquote illegal immigrants, you know, these people whose grandfathers probably grew up in New Mexico before they were forced out.
Right.
You know, not even acknowledging the genocide of the people that were here before us.
Yeah, I caught that, and that's why I asked the question I did, and Ruth Ann will tell you, I'm very conscientious of the actual genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah, the real Holocaust.
It was against our millions and millions and millions of people from here.
52 million plus indigenous natives. Those are the figures. And you know, we can talk about the Jewish Holocaust all we want, but hey, you know, who's forgetting the story in this country?
Yeah. We have to actually search this kind of thing out because we're not taught it in school.
No, it's deleted from the history books.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our history books, I mean, I loved history in school, and now it's just in the past few years I've been finding out that everything I was taught was just lies, or else the truth was omitted, which is another form of lying.
Well, my favorite thing I found in recent years was there's a show on, I won't name the network because I don't remember and don't care, but there was called History Detectives. And they did a blow-by-blow forensic examination of the Little Bighorn in Custer's Last Stand.
Oh.
And the fact came out that actually it wasn't a last famous brave stand. The soldiers of the cavalry, the 7th Cavalry, were running scared like little girls when they were cut down. And they were outgunned, outmanned, and outsmarted. So there's your history.
Well, that's so much, and you know, it's the whole thing was the whole apples and oranges anyway, because the people that came over here and started fighting, their idea, I mean, was to take and own land, while the people who lived here, they didn't have that concept of ownership.
And they belonged to the land.
Right, so they were easy pickings because they say, well, sure, you know, this and this. And then the white men thought, wow, did I ever get them? And then they go around trying to enforce these illegal, immoral contracts.
Well, the natives believe that they belong to the earth, and the invaders believe that the earth belonged to them. That's the big difference.
And we still have that.
Yes, we do.
Because we're invading around the world. When I say we, I mean the U.S. and other Western countries. And believing that we have a right to it. We have 5% of the world's population, and we're using up 40% of the natural resources. There's a real problem there. But
yeah, it's called greed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's called greed. Have you seen this video? It's on YouTube. It's by a group called Steppenwolf called Monster 2008.
I haven't. Derek, have you?
No.
No.
If you watch this video, it is still relevant today, and the song was written back in the 70s, and back then was an awesome song, but if you look at this video, you're going to be amazed, shocked, surprised, and really, really impressed, because they've taken an idea that's as old as life and put it into a song and made it eternal.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. It's all about greed and people who take what they don't deserve and killing in the wrong idiom and too many things. But anyway,
right.
So I'm sure that John Kay of Steppenwolf is very happy I just did that for him. But
okay, and I want to say that I'm just getting a banner here from BTR. I'm telling you, since they were hacked, there's always something. Evidently, there's some problem with people calling in. But the techs are working. So I'm hoping that doesn't mean that Susan Marie or Rick are trying to call and can't get in.
Well, that would suck.
But they haven't messaged me. Somebody else did, but they haven't. So I think, well, you know, they were hacked big time, and so we've just been dealing with little things since then. Quinn, another one of yours, please.
Sure. How about a romance?
Oh, okay. Surprises. Hey, romance. Okay.
Okay. This is a lost love.
Oh.
Piece. This is called Tattooed. It's a prose, not a poem. I wish I could say that this is the last time I will ever think of you, write about you. The simple fact is that you are engraved upon me, searing deeply into my flesh, coursing through my veins. My being is stained by your indelible essence. When I close my eyes, I can still see you. If I hearken to my memory, I can still hear you. Taste you, smell you, feel you. You are as much a part of me as my own skin. Try as I might, I am unable to erase you. I curse the day you made your mark upon me. Though the charm and beauty is now fading, you still remain etched upon my very soul. I am destined to wear you upon my heart forever. My beautiful, painful, invisible tattoo.
Oh, that's so sad. Have you had a lot? You say you fall in love easily, Quinn. Have you had a lot of like bad times doing that?
When is it bad to feel like you're falling in love? It's the most wonderful feeling in the world. The bad times are
after?
When you realize you've done it with the wrong person.
Well, on the other hand, we have interactions, relationships with people so that we can grow and they can grow. So maybe it's like, you know, you've grown all you can with that person. It's time for both of you to move on.
That's happened to me too. Yeah.
But I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean it's easy.
It ain't never easy.
No.
It's like pulling a splinter out of your toe. You know, it hurts like hell, but you want to get rid of it.
Okay, well, okay, now there I have to use my imagination, but I'm very good at that. I'm visualizing, so okay. I don't think I've ever had a splinter in my toe, but it sounds painful.
Well, have you ever had something stuck in your eye?
No.
Are you living in a bubble?
Yeah, I do. No, I mean, I've had a lot of hurts and pains, and I had one of those. Well, actually, I had two of those men that beat the hell out of me in my life.
Oh, crap.
And, that kind of thing. But so, I mean, I've had plenty of pain, but I just never had anything in my eye or my toe.
Okay. Well, but no, you've had it worse than an eye or a toe. And when you say you had men that beat the crap out of you, that makes me livid. I think those.
You know that you've seen in cartoons, you see somebody get hit and they see stars, and
yeah.
I always thought that was, well, that's a cartoon, and then it really happened, and because, well, I was in shock more than anything, because I'd never been spanked as a kid or anything, and mm-hmm. and when I leave home and then I run into not just one but two, but that was it. I learned. It was painful, but I learned. I mean, I'm not real stupid.
Yeah. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Yeah.
Yeah. No more of that. But
No. I got my ass kicked one time outside of a. It was a family restaurant. It was called Fast Brothers Family Fish House. It was in Portsmouth, Virginia. And there was a guy and his wife and their young child. I think the boy was about 5 years old, sitting at the booth across from me and my date. And he kept smacking that child on the mouth. I was like, man.
Oh.
And my date was saying, don't get involved. Don't get involved. I said, no, I can't take this. This guy's an asshole. So finally I got up and I walked over. I said, hey, kind of free with that hand, aren't you? I said, you want to pick on somebody your own size? He said, yeah, sure. And we went outside and he proceeded to beat the living crap out of me. But I got in a few good blows, and when the police came, they took him away in handcuffs, not me, and the owner of the restaurant gave me my meal on the house. So.
Oh, well, well, okay. I hope that you were never desperate enough for a free meal that you
wanted. Well, I don't think that was my game plan initially, but you get what I'm coming from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't pick on the weak in front of me, because I'm gonna.
Then it's just wrong, and that's what war is about, and that's what earlier Blaine was, you know, talking about different things happening in Palestine and the.
Yeah, I was listening to that with great interest. Actually, he had a lot of information I wasn't aware of.
Oh, it's much worse than people think. If they don't follow it, they don't understand what's happening.
Well, but it certainly opened my eyes. Derek, where are you in all this? I'm not hearing your voice.
Jump in.
I'm
We're talking
curious.
About pain and things. Earlier, before we went on the air, Derek, Quinn and I were talking about, he has some young girls that like his poetry. And we were talking about the, because they like the romance, and they're saying that any woman would love having all these things said. What kind of, I don't want to say following, but what kind of people like your poetry?
Honestly, I have only shared my poetry, on my Facebook page and in my own website, and I haven't really gotten any responses on my own website because I just launched it, and I don't think very many people are looking at it. And the Facebook responses have really just been my friends. I was actually very surprised when you contacted me because I think you were the first person kind of outside of my kind of at least extended circles that reached out and told me they really liked it and wanted me to share it.
Yeah, well, that's true. I saw something you wrote, and I thought, wow, okay. And then you said, but I've never done that before. Well,
Derek, you need to come to writerscafe.org. Yes, you need to skip over there and join, and you're going to make a lot of friends very quickly. Your poetry is good. It's viable. It has heart. It makes sense. You're going to be, you'd be surprised. Come on over there and check us out.
Will do.
We'll send you the, because it's, because Quinn Finn is there and other people.
It's over 14,000 writers strong.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you'll probably get some nasty, I don't know if you will or not, but I mean, mostly it seems like people who write are encouraging to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It's like that support system, that family kind of thing. So I want to say again that site is www.writerscafe.org. Quinn Finn is there, and Derek will be.
We hope. And make sure to friend me, Derek, because I'm going to pick you up as quick as I see you.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously. I think you really like that venue. It's it'll open your eyes, and it'll make you a lot of friends in the poetry circle, really. And there are a few hard critics on there who get cruel and unkind, and I have locked horns with a couple of them, and they chose to tangle with me and try to match wits, and they were sadly, sadly humiliated. But, yeah. It doesn't go on much. It doesn't go on much at all.
Yeah. And then you can also find Derek at his new site, www.truthfever.com. So I'm going to let you guys go. I'm assuming Rick is not coming, and Susan probably, because she was her gig was going to last till about 9:30, and she had about a 20-minute to 30-minute drive home, so she thought she'd be in by now. But
can I ask real quickly,
sure.
www.truthfever.com, Derek, what is your name there?
Well, it's my own personal site, so it just says Derek Abuntu Dunham on it.
Okay.
And before we go, Derek, you want to explain what Ubuntu, the middle name you've taken, what that means?
It is an African philosophy. It's been translated a lot of different ways, but my favorite is I Am Who I Am Because of Who We All Are.
I just love that.
I like that.
Yeah. It makes me think of one of my favorite words, namaste.
Namaste, yes.
Yeah, which means, you know, the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. I mean, that's one of the definitions. So, yeah, I like these one word that means a whole lot of things to many people. Guys, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, Ruth Ann.
Well, it was very, very nice, and we shall do another one. So thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wait. We do have Susan Marie in.
Uh-oh.
She's in the chat. So if she will give a call, we'll. Yes, Susan, call in 718-664-6436. Yeah, she just made it. So evidently, it's just the host numbers are having problem with BTR. Because they put another banner up. I mean, like, okay. Once wasn't enough. Well, she's calling, but
it's not coming through.
It's not coming through, but maybe. We'll see if maybe she couldn't hear. So I typed it in chat, which it is the number that's on the page. So we'll give her a little time to call in.
More music.
That's amazing. More music. You want some more music?
I don't care. I'm really...
Well, in that case, I'm going to give you some music. Now, this, I think...
For chicks in bars, for Cadillac cars, from Venus to Mars, you only see stars, and the distance is great, filled with love. And with hate, I'm left with these songs to try and relate. Resentment runs deep, as in how do you sleep? The price is so steep. Which dreams will you keep? Words that we say.
This man. In fact, our friend Sarit had turned us on to him because they went to school together. He's a musician in New York. And when I saw the title, Chicks and Bars, I thought, oh, God, is it going to be another one of those? But it's really, really good. So we have Susan Marie from Buffalo, New York with us. Hi, Sue. Hey, Ruthann, how are you doing?
I am great. We're so glad we've got Derek Dunham with us and Quinn Overman, and they have both done a couple of their poems, and we've been talking about inspiration and different things like that. And you just came from a poetry reading.
Yeah, I did. I just came from a featured poetry spot at the Center for Inquiry. It was really cool, so I'm very happy to do this as well.
Okay, well, hey, just make a full night of it. And then, you know, this is Bieltinay, so then you can go dance around the fire.
That's what I said. Why is this all happening on the one day? See that?
Yeah, well, you can wait till the weekend for that if you want. That's what I'm thinking. But anyway, you know, Bieltinay, it's very special to me. And, of course, it's May Day Red Day, too. So, you know, people have been out doing everything against capitalism today. So it's like, why not? But now, guys, I should ask you before we have Susan read, have either of you read at a poetry reading like she's just come from?
I have not.
No? Okay, Derek, have you?
I have been to one open mic and also a class about learning to perform your poetry, in which we read some of our poetry out loud. But other than that, just those two experiences.
Yeah, okay. Well, Susan, what you missed, Quinn did a very, romantic, because he's a romantic poet, poem. It was sort of depressing, too. And then he did one that was about the environment. And Derek did one about somebody being, he was talking about the Liberty Bell and how, you know, as a Native American, that just doesn't ring true at all. And then he did one about somebody who had done some time in prison because 12 people decided that he was guilty. So where are you going to go with us tonight?
Well, this is good. We have a lot of diversity this evening. I have I wrote something, you can't really call it a poem, it's more like stream of consciousness, but it's what I witnessed in my city, in the social services office.
Okay.
And it's called This Is My America.
Mm.
It's right up your alley, Ruthann.
Yeah. Okay, let's hear This Is My America.
Okay. This Is My America. Have you ever looked into the eyes of a homeless man? Caverns deep in knowing? He sat humbled behind comprehension, child by his side. I knew this man was homeless not due to his attire, due to suitcases, 5 or 6, surrounding him on all sides. His child quiet played with a toy. At this moment observing, I wish I had something to write with so I could relay the beauty of this man and his child to the world. You see, he were dressed in a 3-piece suit. This man, now homeless. And he had more dignity than those of us who reside in luxury. How utterly helpless I felt, bearing witness to father and son, waiting in line, their number to be called, eventually, like all the rest. Life is a mystery, placing us precisely at the exact unexpected moment in time, slow like molasses to teach us lessons. A number called, finally. I held great hope hidden deep within my throat for the child. Homeless by circumstance, never once complained. And I overheard, we are unable to help you, sir. You need to have an address to get aid. The man never raised his voice, the child still. I just lost my home, the man replied. I came here because I have nowhere else to go. My child is hungry. Yet the same monotonous response came from behind the bulletproof glass. Sir, you must have an address in order to receive aid. He rose then, man and child, no home nor food, and grasped the hand of his son. The child understood, both of their eyes showing signs of no sleep. They walked out the door dragging all they owned onto the frigid winter streets. I never saw them again, this man and child. I hoped he were just visiting or that the clerk had made a mistake, but no. This is my America. Man and child, 3-piece suit in the cold. And even now I envision them both, father and son, begging for things that should be given. And I am ashamed at myself, ashamed for not walking to him, for observing,
A shame for not whispering five miraculous words. How can I help you?
Mm. Wow. Okay, Sue, that's just kick-ass. okay. Mm. Yeah, our America.
There you go. This is my America.
Can I declare open bounty on Paul Ryan now?
Well, sure. My top, yeah. Oh.
I was homeless for 16 months, so that poem hit me in my heart.
Oh, wow. You know, I really saw this, and I sat there, and that's why I really still to this day, I'm sure he got some sort of help, but I felt so helpless, I really did, because I saw that. And, you know, when you see someone sitting there with their kid and all their belongings at a social service office, that's their last, they have nothing else to do.
Right.
You know? And no, that is literally what he was told. To get any kind of aid, you have to have an address. I mean, that's insane.
It's insane.
It is insane. And I sat there going, what? Okay, so all of these people in here, because they have an address, they get aid, but this man has no home. He gets nothing. Shouldn't it be the other way around? And yes, he did just walk out the door. I don't know where he went, probably to a shelter.
No, when I was homeless, the social services wouldn't do anything to help me until I could give them an address.
Exactly. That's exactly what I witnessed. And I sat there. I felt horrible for just the things that I had. Like, I'm, like, sitting there going, oh, my gosh, I'm not even here for any issue close to that.
Mm-mm.
You know, but this is our America.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad. It's horrible. It should, this stuff for America, I don't know. Homeless and hungry people, that really gets to me. It's something big. But, yeah, I really did witness that. So that oh, gosh. And I had nothing to write with. I hoped I could remember it.
You did. That's what we talked about earlier, like the inspirations for your writing. And you write about what you know or what you can imagine very vividly.
Mm-hmm. And as she put it better than I did, by just calling it a stream of consciousness, because that's what it is.
Yeah, you got it. That's most of my writing. It's really your subconscious, you know, beat writers like Kerouac, you know, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of writers that I like, but that's mostly what you nailed it, your subconscious. You know, everything inspires me.
We talked to you earlier. Derek said that his advice to somebody would be to just write what you want. Don't be trying to worry about how people are going to accept it.
Yep, I totally agree. Totally agree. There's a great book, if you don't mind me mentioning. It's the only book I ever suggest to people, and it's Stephen King's very short volume. You could get it free online. Just go to Google. It's called On Writing by Stephen King. And literally, he tells you, just write. Because he didn't live this life where he was this well-known author. He was poor. He struggled. But he kept at it. And obviously, he didn't care about what anybody, I mean, look at now, you know. But that is the only book I read that really touched me. And he talks about his alcohol addiction, his drug addiction, how they were poor. And, you know, I mean, I totally agree with that. You can't care, especially being a writer. You just can't care. You got to write what's inside of you. Just let that out. Let it fly.
Well, that's what like you said, the stream of consciousness. That was then the advice that Quinn gave was that, like, don't edit while you're going, just write.
Yeah, and totally.
You can go back and tweak it.
Totally agree with that, because if you're gonna sit here and write and you're gonna edit the whole time, you're gonna lose it. It's gone. Whatever you're trying to here's my thing. Whatever you write, like art in general, it should evoke some sort of emotion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely. Yeah. It's got, even if it's anger or something.
Right, I think the guys will agree with that. I mean, you
cannot perfect the core of your feelings by examining them while they're happening. You have to look at them afterwards and say, hey, this is what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's important, that first statement that you said. You can't, what did you say, you can't examine the core of your feelings?
Yes. You can't try to perfect
it while
you're feeling them. You don't know what the hell's going on until you sit back and look at what's going on.
Yep, you're right. And you don't even know half the time. Sometimes I'll write, I don't know even know what I'm writing.
That's what I call automatic writing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. People are like, how do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. You could say apple to me, and I'll start writing, and then it turns into, you know, some Greek mythology. I don't know what I'm writing. You know what I mean? Really? And they're like, what? I don't know. I don't have an answer for this. It just flies out of my head. I don't know.
Oh, I like that Apple to Greek mythology show.
Serious? You should try it. I'm like, go, come online sometime to me. Give me a word, and I'll just go blah, 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 like you just said. I don't examine it. I just let it let the fingers write, type, whatever. I don't even think. I just let it go. Automatic grading.
Like, it's kind of like a it's like a literal Rorschach test.
That's good.
See.
Yeah.
Write it down.
Yep, it's true. And then, like you said, that is excellent advice. And then later, if I want to publish it or you want to read it out, okay, you might refine it a little bit.
Right, right. And that's what we were talking about, publishing. And you have published, right, Susan?
Yes, yeah. I totally encourage lots of publishing, self-publishing, publishing in magazines, journals, whatever, online, whatever you can find, just publish your work. I mean, if you're lucky, you'll get paid for it. Although, as a writer, that's a poor man's job, but that's not why I write, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I think that the three of you all agree that you're not in it for the money.
No.
Accolades. You're really writing to express yourself.
Yeah, definitely. If I couldn't, I don't know what I would do if I couldn't write.
Well, see, that's because it's just bubbling out of you. Derek is at www.truthfever.com. Quinn is writing at www.writerscafe.org. And you have susanmariepr.blogspot.com, right? Is that the your address?
Yeah, that's like I just keep a blog now. You know me. You could catch me at pretty much online anywhere writing. So
And we were talking about, just different things that, you know, and we of course talked a little bit about politics here and there, and I would like to say that you are a big pro-Palestinian humanitarian and pro-Pakistani.
Yeah, definitely, big time.
You were fighting for the relief, the flood relief, and all this, like, what, a couple years ago? And, I mean, you have just been very involved with Pakistan.
Yeah, that's funny. People ask me about that a lot, and it's another thing I can't explain. It's like, like you know, things that you end up supporting. I guess the most thing I could say is all the people that I know in that nation, you know, I live here, and I think of real simple things that we have, you know.
Yeah.
And I look over there to dealing with, like, I could just mention 25 different, you know, things that we never see.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. So it's so strange, though, because, like you, I mean, Pakistan, like, why? I have a friend, Brian, who is very involved in Pakistan, too, and I mean, he doesn't really know, and that's me. I mean, where did I come from with Palestine and Kashmir? And because of Kashmir, I got involved with Pakistan, too. So those are, like, the three that I really, really am all over. I think it's so strange how we... But there again, that's sort of that stream of consciousness, when we don't call it that. But, you know, one thing leads us to another, and I don't know.
But it is kind of the same thing, because I don't have an answer for it. I've never been to these nations. I'd love to go to these nations.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've never been there. But I think it's, again, it's that humanitarian thing where, like, inside of you, you're like, this is wrong.
Right, right.
Like, past and, wrong. Well,
and the great thing is, I mean, for like tonight, and you guys all have been gifted with the ability to write about it. And I think that is fabulous. We've got to go now. Susan, I'm so glad you got in.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much. And thanks, everybody.
Yeah, Derek and Quinn, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And we'll do this again. I like talking with creative people.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Ruth Ann. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.